The Guardian. Hello and welcome to Science Weekly. I'm Nicola Davis. Before we get started, I wanted to tell you about our new daily podcast. It's called Today in Focus, and it takes you behind the headlines for a deeper understanding of the news. Every weekday, you'll hear personal perspectives and expert analysis from the Guardian journalists at the centre of our biggest stories. Subscribe to Today in Focus on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Right, back to Science Weekly. At the end of a dusty road in a remote part of southern Africa sits a small concrete building with an orange door. It's a structure so modest and remote that it's hard to believe it could hold lessons for addressing one of our biggest challenges. How to grapple with a soaring world population. The world's population is on track to hit 8 billion in 2023 and almost 10 billion by 2050. Sub-Saharan Africa is set to grow faster than anywhere. There were 1 billion Africans in 2010, but that number will grow to 2.5 billion by 2050. The concern is how the Earth will support a growing population with growing demands on resources. Some have warned that this growth in population risks driving civilization over the edge. But this is controversial, given that it's rich countries, not poor, that consume the majority of the world's resources. It's a complex issue. But now, the average woman in Botswana is having fewer than half the number of children she would have had 50 years ago. How has this happened? And what impact has this had?
You know, those past years, women didn't work. And now they're professionals, they have jobs. They go to work just like men. They don't stay home to look after the kids like those olden days.
This is a story of how Botswana empowered women and gave them control over their own fertility. And we ask, could President Trump's gag rule put this progress in jeopardy?
You know, we go into a community, so we gain their trust and confidence, and just when they were settling into receiving the services, we had to withdraw. So for me, it sounds like and it feels like a breach of trust with the communities.
I'm Nicola Davis, and this is Science Weekly. Years ago, women in Botswana had around 7 children on average. So women, like China, were the norm.
I have 7 children so far, and all the time I was bearing these 7 children, there was never a break in between. Now I stay at home, I'm unemployed, and I failed junior high school. I dropped out because I was pregnant.
Can I just ask how old you are, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 30 years old.
But now women like China are becoming statistically rarer.
I asked for help because the pregnancies were getting out of hand. Knowing myself, if it wasn't for the implant, I'd be pregnant now.
The average woman in Botswana now has fewer than 3 children. But understanding how this happened isn't so simple.
Everyone is always asking, how did this happen? And, you know, I think, certainly from where I sit, it's impossible to to say with any certainty, but there's been a huge amount of change.
This is Dr. Chelsea Moroney.
I'm a reader in international sexual and reproductive health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine and the current deputy director of the UK Faculty of Sexual and Reproductive Healthcare's Clinical Effectiveness Unit. But I live and work here full time. And here in Botswana, I work mainly through an organization called the Botswana UPenn Partnership. I work as their clinical lead for sexual and reproductive health care and direct a research, teaching and training and clinical service development group called the Botswana Sexual and Reproductive Health Initiative with the University of Botswana, and we provide support for the Ministry of Health.
It's a long list of titles that Chelsea has, and it reflects her dedication to providing sexual health services here in Botswana. As we talk, she leans back on her chair and sweeps her long brown hair away from her face. We're in her office at the University of Botswana, a cool interior in contrast to the heat of the August sun. She tells me there's been a huge amount of change in Botswana and that there are many factors at play.
So first of all, Botswana essentially became an independent country in 1966. It's been a stable democracy ever since then. Botswana has had high levels of economic growth over that period, and some of the consequences of that have been development of a healthcare infrastructure, a development of an educational infrastructure that particularly enables young women to have high levels of education and basically employment opportunity, particularly for young women in the job force. And all of those things kind of on the macro level are really important to fertility declines anywhere in the world. Botswana also was very proactive in the early years in establishing a family planning program. So a program that was far-reaching in terms of its geographical reach, providing access to most people in the country to a range of contraceptive methods. And so it's probably a combination of all of those things that have seen this massive decline in fertility.
Maternal and child health and family planning services were up and running as soon as Botswana became independent in 1966. Today, a suite of contraceptives are available through facilities ranging from the most rural health posts to urban hospitals. One of the organisations offering this high-quality contraceptive care is BOFWA, the Botswana Family Welfare Association.
I'm here at BOFWA HQ in Gaborone. It's a beautiful sunny day. There's not a cloud in the sky and it's a wonderful setting. There are bright orange porta cabins, which is where the consultations take place here. The women are waiting outside to talk to the clinicians here. And I'm about to go and speak to Tiro, who is one of those who does the consultations and delivers the contraception here. Hi Tiro, nice to meet you. Hi.
Nice to meet you too.
Great to be here at BOFWA.
It's our pleasure to have you here. Hello, my name is Tiro Yawane Khaswanyani. I'm the service delivery officer here in BOFWA. I'm also the clinic manager. I'm also the health commodities supply chain manager. And I've been working here for 4 years now, both as a volunteer and now as an employee.
Tiro, what sort of age groups do you deal with here? Is it mainly younger people? And why is that important?
Most of the clients here, or our main target group here, is adolescents and young people, especially those under the age of 24. The reason being, this is a sensitive population who feel that they don't receive services that are sensitive to their needs back in public health facilities. They feel they're being judged, they feel they're being made to stay in long queues, and they cannot express themselves freely without fear of being victimized or fear of being judged at public health facilities. So we encourage adolescents and young people to come here and discuss their issues amongst themselves as peers, and again, to be free in discussing their issues with us.
BOFWA has 5 clinics dotted around the country. And from each core clinic, nurses then periodically travel to health posts in surrounding smaller villages to provide sexual health services.
It's so bumpy.
I went to visit a clinic in Kanye, which is a little under 100 kilometres southwest of the country's capital, Gaborone. While Kanye is often described as a big village, it seemed more like a town. There's a KFC, supermarket, widespread housing, schools and guest houses, although baboons can be found playing near the lake. It's in Kanye where I met Penyo.
Okay, thank you. My name is Penyo Ndogo. I am a nurse midwife.
And so you do a lot of work here, both in the clinic here at Kanye, but you also go out to a lot of villages around the area, some quite a way away. Tell me what you do there.
We cover a lot of villages surrounding Kanye, because Kanye is a big village, as you can see, so it's more or less like a town. So we visit them periodically. We as an outreach service.
So when experts like Penyo visit villages, they support services at the health posts and provide additional help and advice. What makes Bofra special is that they work very closely with the community, and in particular young people. It employs locals as peer educators, and they help to distribute advice on family planning to the community. This type of interaction, some believe, has played an important role in the fertility decline in Botswana.
It's a beautiful morning here in Kanye, and I'm just waiting for Penyo to arrive. And we're going to travel today to a village called Silokolela, which is about 40 minutes away from Kanye here. And we're going to talk to some of the peer educators who work with Bofra in the community there.
Lame is a peer educator working in Silokolela. She's a young woman in her early 20s, and she helps to dispense advice on anything related to sexual health, from puberty to contraception and sexually transmitted infections. And because she's lived here her whole life, she knows everyone and everyone knows her. She's trusted by her peers, and she engenders a sense of connection, camaraderie and solidarity. But as we talk, I see more than that, an ambition to make things better.
I saw there was a need to inform and educate because of the high rates of alcohol intake, unemployment, and teenage pregnancy. There are young people who aren't informed, and so I give them information so that they can make informed decisions.
And can I ask, how old are you? And are you the same age as the people who you're working with, or are they younger than you?
I'm the same age as my peers, although there are some who are older. That doesn't matter though, age doesn't matter. They have to respect me and listen to me, even though they're older than me.
And what sort of impact have you seen the work that you're doing having with those children? Is it changing behaviour?
It's making a huge impact because I'm really seeing people refraining from those nasty behaviours, and now they're engaging in family planning methods. They have the implant and use condoms.
When I ask Lame what her future plans are, she says she wants to move to the city, like her friends. This is an aspiration I heard time and again as I spoke to women in rural communities, and it could be another factor in the fertility decline. On average, women in cities have fewer children than their rural counterparts. A mother of seven children, China first came across Bofra through a peer-to-peer educator like Lame. And like many others I spoke to, she opted for the implant, a device that was only introduced into Botswana in 2016.
They did give us different options. There was an injection, condoms and the pill, as well as the implant. But I'm better off with the implant than any of these because it lasts longer.
And just tell me, what was it about that you really liked? Was it just that it lasted a long time? And is it about spacing pregnancies, or is it about saying that you don't want any more children?
At the moment, I have seven children. The oldest is in primary school, and the youngest is only 11 months. And at least now, I won't be able to have children. But this won't be my last implant. I'll continue with the implant until my kids are finishing school. because I've had so many children now, it's so difficult to raise them.
Enabling women to control their fertility almost inevitably leads them to having fewer babies. But it also has enormous ramifications for women's health, education and employment, with knock-on effects for society and the economy. Here's clinic manager Tiro again.
You know, those past years, women didn't work. And now they have, they're professionals, they have jobs. They go to work just like men. They don't stay home to look after the kids like those olden days. So they limit the number of kids they have in order to pursue their professional development.
As you've heard, Botswana's dramatic fertility decline involves a complex web of factors spanning education, health and economics to allow women the chance to control a fundamental part of their life. But could this progress be in jeopardy? In January 2017, Donald Trump reinstated the controversial global gag rule. This prevents US federal funds going to any group that performs or even provides information about abortions. And the effects are being felt in Botswana.
And the reality is that as a result, and I think that, you know, this has certainly been starting to be quantified, people suffer and women die.
After the break, we'll see what effect Trump's gag rule is having in Botswana. We'll be back in a minute.
Once upon a time, we spoke with two writers who have set out on a journey to rescue fairy tales from toxic masculinity. Jessie Burton, author of the best-selling novel The Miniaturist, and Kieran Millward Hargrave join us to discuss what fun can be had taking the grim out of all those old stories with the help of magicians, dancing princesses, and courtiers called Clarence. See if they all live happily ever after in this week's Guardian Books podcast.
Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Nicola Davis. Before the break, we looked at Botswana's declining fertility rates. 50 years ago, women in Botswana would have 7 children on average. Now they have fewer than 3. Enabling women to have control over their fertility has empowered women. It's allowed them to make choices about what they want to do with their lives. It has enabled fantastic progress. However, this could be in jeopardy because of Trump's gag rule.
Basically, to summarize the global...
Contraceptive expert, Dr. Chelsea Moroney again.
On Trump's, I think it was his first full day in office, he reinstated what was called the Mexico City policy, more appropriately really labeled as the global gag rule. And essentially, it prohibits the allocation of U.S. funding to foreign organizations that offer services or information related to abortion. And that's really broadly defined, from sort of counseling to services to referral to advocacy, and requires that organizations sign a pledge that they don't do this or won't do this in order to receive funding on which they're often highly, highly dependent.
Abortion in Botswana is legal, but in limited circumstances, as Una Ngwenya tells me.
Yeah, abortion in Botswana is restricted. It's not illegal. It
can happen under... Una is Bofwa's CEO. She's based in the country's capital, Gaborone.
It can happen under 4 counts where there has been incest, where there has been rape, where there's gross malformation of the child, and where the mother's physical health is at risk. You know, when you get a teenager who's pregnant, they are in school, they are scared of their parents, so there's a very, very, you know, high likelihood of them trying to terminate the pregnancy through unsafe means. So this becomes a very important component of our pre-abortion counseling. So we also deal with post-abortion care. So when people have had the abortion, they are free to come to Bofa, and then we do everything, including contraception. And, you know, like when there's infection, we treat or we refer. You know, we do, you know, all that is required to be done in that particular instance. Yeah.
Nurse Penyo feels this pre- and post-abortion care is incredibly important.
We don't do abortion. If someone have had an abortion somewhere outside and then he comes for us, what do you do? We provide the counseling. And then we insert what? The long-acting contraceptives. That's where we fit in, so that this abortion don't keep on occurring, so that this person knows that now that is using contraceptives, he won't be easily get pregnant. You see? So we don't do abortion, and that thing we denied because of this gag rule that I don't want to talk much about it.
Even though Bofwa doesn't offer abortion as a service, only counselling, it has had its funding from the US restricted. Una tells me this has led to two Bofwa centres being closed.
You know, we go into a community, we gain that trust and confidence, and just when they were settling into receiving the services, we had to withdraw. So for me, it sounds like and it feels like a breach of trust with the communities.
And it's not just a breach of trust. As well as two centres shutting down, Bofwa has had to suspend certain projects specifically engaging with vulnerable populations, including sex workers and men who have sex with men, as well as another project working with vulnerable children.
To a whole lot of things. We deal with extremely vulnerable populations. You know, making a choice for them is not easy. So, you know, when they have confidence in you as a service provider and suddenly you have to terminate, you can imagine what goes on with the emotions and things. So, yes, the communities are impacted. So the gag rule was really a negative aspect on our service delivery, yes.
Dr. Chelsea Moroney again.
I probably don't need to connect the dots for people to understand that the implications of that can be absolutely devastating. Loss of funding, closure of facilities, and in many contexts, these organizations, these NGOs are providing not just care that's related to abortion or family planning, which is absolutely essential and needed, but often the only point of care for a range of health services for women and families. So the knock-on effects of this are certainly around access to abortion care and more broadly to sexual and reproductive health services, but also in almost every other domain of health that you can think about. So malaria, HIV and TB. And the reality is that as a result, and I think that, you know, this has certainly been starting to be quantified, people suffer and women die.
Only time will tell how far the impact of Trump's gag rule will go. But it's clear that such funding cuts have a profound and immediate effect on the lives of men and women, affecting all aspects of their sexual health and far more besides. Nonetheless, Una feels optimistic about Bofwa's future.
Yeah, I mean, Bofwa is a very resilient organization, and we've been here for 30 years. We will go on for a good while to come. Our sustainability is not mainly just having finance, it's also about empowering our community such that they will be able to continue the services even when we are not there.
I wanted to thank all the guests you heard today for making time for being interviewed. Please note that some names were changed to protect the identity of interviewees. The podcast was based on an article I wrote for The Guardian. Links to the article can be found on the podcast page. Head to theguardian.com/podcasts and navigate to this week's episode of Science Weekly. I'm Nicola Davis. Thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.